Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
This is part two of our discussion with John Sparra on leadership during adversity. We jump right back into our conversation on handling the topic of social injustice with our teams. I would assume that a lot of white coaches would hesitate to be the leaders and discuss this topic if they don't have that firsthand experience. I've also heard, I want to get your thoughts on this, that some coaches maybe were worried about throwing the responsibility on their black athletes. Like, let's say if you send like a different situation too, where you have, five players. If you have like, you're the one black kid on your team and maybe the coach or people are calling you out to speak on this, it seems like a lot of pressure and responsibility. I guess, how would you recommend coaches handle that situation with hearing their athletes, but maybe not thrusting them into like the limelight?
Right. I will share with you that one of the things I heard from the athletes was that what a lot of people were doing was calling them and saying, "Hey, what can I do?" And looking to them to be a resource on the black experience. And eventually you get enough of those phone calls and you're like, "Geez, you know," that is a weight for those athletes to carry. And I think the feeling was a little bit like, "Hey, you figure it out." Like, there's some responsibility there for all of us to do our best to understand what's there. And there are resources out there. And I can understand that. You hear a little bit about this in trauma. Like when somebody loses somebody, a lot of times what people do is they call them up and then they try to empathize with them by sharing their own trauma. And what you end up doing is dumping more trauma and negative feelings on the traumatized. And I think what I wanted to do was listen and understand. And then I wanted to assume some responsibility on ourselves to learn about it. And so I would just encourage white coaches who have black athletes to listen and then to really, you can reach out to me, you know, who's done just a phenomenal job of trying to understand this circumstance and educate himself and how to teach his athletes and to provide an open environment is Sam Schweisky at Princeton. And I've talked to Sam on a number of occasions about this. He's really taken a lead role in this nationally. And he sent me a bunch of resources and just, I think it's not that hard for all of us that are like, "Hey, it's up to us. We all can do our part to make the world a better place and to understand one another and the stories that we tell." And I literally went online and bought some books about how to talk about race and what is white privilege. Like, these things I never even knew. So I'm in the middle of trying to educate myself, watched a couple documentaries. I think what we did with the team about watching a documentary and then chatting about it is really a healthy thing to do. I would encourage those white coaches to take some responsibility on yourself, and then you can ask your athletes about their perspectives. But then you take some of the pressure off of them. I think you want to take the pressure off, not put it on. And I don't think you want to place any trauma on them. I think you want to offer your support, listen to their story, and then do your best to really understand what the general theme the black community is trying to share and to be there to listen and understand.
Cool. And can you, I don't know if you mentioned what documentary you guys watched?
I watched Just Mercy. What was it? 13th?
Yeah. 13th.
Yeah.
It's a tough one.
We did 13th as a team. I have a book over here. I'll carry my phone over here and grab it real quick. I just got it the other day. You know, I even got a book for my girls. I've got a 3- and a 4-year-old. And I even got a book the other day that is about black women leaders in the history of the United States. It's a kid's book. And so my wife and I are just going through. And and reading one of those stories each night to our girls. I'm just trying to do my part to educate ourselves a little bit. My wife cleans up too much, so my book disappeared. But there's a couple books on Amazon that were really well recommended, and I got one of them. And so, hold on. I'm literally walking through my room right now and trying to find it. I don't know what to do with it. So, but yeah, I just continue to read and educate. There's great articles and all kinds of stuff out there for people.
Great.
It's called Race Talk.
Race Talk.
And the Conspiracy of Silence, by Derald Wing Su. And it looks to be really good. So
nice. And then how can we in the volleyball community help bring about more diversity in our sport, both athletes and especially in the coaching world?
Well, yeah, this is a topic too that we've talked about, and should we support? We're talking about maybe our conference, the MPSF, the EIVA is doing this. The MIVA, I think, is doing this, where we're supporting the ABCA's minority coaching projects that they have, where they're supporting coaches going to the ABCA convention every year. And I think that's really beneficial. There's not enough coaches of color in our country that can provide the role models that are necessary for players to come and see. But I also think we need to get more players. At the end of the day, we just haven't had enough boys or girls of color that are playing our sport. And so I really am excited about the relationship and the hopeful collaboration we have with the SIAC, the Historical Black College and University Conference in the Southeast. The commissioner there, Greg Moore, is a real, I think, really thoughtful, bright. I've really enjoyed getting to know him and collaborate with him on this grant that we gave to the SIAC. And I think the opportunity to work with leaders in the Black community and discuss ways that would be effective for us to share our sport with underrepresented populations is something that I think is a real opportunity for us. Obviously, USA Volleyball and Jamie Davis saw that as a wonderful opportunity and contributed $400,000 to that $1 million grant. But I think we need to really be intentional about how we share volleyball with those communities where it's not really a part of their culture at this point. I think we have to be cognizant that clubs and the way that we find collegiate talent right now is through a club program that prices out lower socioeconomic communities. And that's a problem. So what the Starlings are doing and what some other people are doing, but how we reach out to those communities and provide camps and clinics and scholarship opportunities at clubs and those types of things are going to be, I think, really important. We just have to get more boys of color playing the game. And I think it really is a top down bottom up approach, which we've really articulated as part of our mission with First Point. But I think it applies to this situation in that you're providing some scholarship opportunities at the historical Black colleges and universities. And then you're doing your part to try and do some grassroots and improvements. So I think that's really the 2-step process you have to go through.
Well, it sounds like getting involved with First Point is a win-win. I hope a lot of people do that. I'm wondering with the national team athletes, what your thoughts are and how you talk to them about how you want them to express their opinions on social media or with the media in general regarding social injustice.
I think they've done a great job, particularly Ben Patch. He's our only Black athlete, and he has really taken on this opportunity to share his experience and his feelings. He's been vocal on social media. I'm just really proud of him because I think he's such a great person and he's a great volleyball player and he's articulate. And I think he can be a leader in our sport. And I think he's embraced this opportunity to do so. And I think that is, I'm really proud of him for doing that. And I think a lot of our players have spoke out and, I think we've all supported, Ben and his experiences. And I think at the end of the day, that's what we need to do is support one another. And I think I know that our national team athletes have really supported him. And I'm just I think that's great. It shows a lot of the character of the players that we currently have. And I know that they'll continue to speak out.
What would you do if one of your players, not necessarily Ben, any of your players wanted to kneel during the anthem and protest during the gold medal ceremony in Tokyo?
Yeah, I'd have his back. I'll tell you that. I mean, I thought about this for a long time. Obviously it was really prevalent a couple of years back with Kaepernick and the football issue. And I wondered if it was going to happen either at UCLA or the USA and played that out in my mind and how it handled that. And I'm fully supportive of it. And I'll tell you why. First, I think, the narrative, the counter narrative that says something about disrespecting our troops and the flag, it misses the mark so significantly for me. I think if you really are paying attention and you're listening to what this was and how this transpired, this is about a social injustice. This is about police brutality, and this is going back a couple years, and here we are again, right? And the way that Kaepernick and some of his teammates were considering this was, how do we show respect for the flag but still say that this nation is not where it needs to be yet? And don't we all say that within sport? Like, we're not there yet. We're not there yet. Like, we're constantly striving to be better. And even within our own national vernacular, it's always about a more perfect union. So I think it's saying almost the same thing, that here we are as a country and we're not perfect, and we should be striving to be better, and we should be asking our leaders to ask us to be better. And that's what we should want. And here is somebody saying, hey, we're not there yet, but he didn't turn his back on the flag. He didn't not show up. He took a knee. And I think for me, there's some aspect of that I thought was, I thought it was pretty, I guess, creative way of expressing his political beliefs while still showing respect for the flag itself. I thought that there was some elegance to that. And so I know that if our athletes do that, I'd have their back, because I think that we all deserve the right to express our feeling that we are in search of a more perfect union, and we're not there yet, and we should be considering how we can make it better.
All right, we're going to end with a couple of listener questions, John. So this first few are from Kansas women's volleyball assistant coach and the best Nielsen, Caitlin Nielsen. She says she's heard you talk about teams in terms of tribes and not families. I guess, do you still believe that? Can you define maybe the difference, and how does it relate to our current state of the world?
Oh boy, I'd want to educate myself a little bit more on tribes. It's a super interesting topic. I know there's some books out there that I haven't read. I probably at this point probably use the word family a little bit more. I know that I've used that quite a bit, even in my Irvine days. Family was one of our foundational values. I talk a lot about USAV. It was always tough and together were our two values, which to me, in terms of how I've constructed values within organizational structures, that's probably been my most effective effort. It was simple, clean, two things. I talked about it in lots of locker rooms. My national team guys are probably sick of it. But I think one thing with values, not to kind of digress from tribes here, I apologize to Caitlin. But I think when you're talking about values, like, so many people have a list of five or six, and then they don't, it's hard to be great at all of them, and you don't talk about all of them. It's about really ensuring that your values and what you're espousing are really understood and acted on. I think a lot of leaders go through these thought processes of developing values, but then they just kind of, then you move on to the next thing and you start talking about side out percentages and you forget to talk about who you are. So the more simple they are, and the more, just articulated on a consistent basis, the better. For me, family, tribes. Those are all things that I'm sure I've talked about in the past relentlessly. I think it's really, really important. I think there's, as you're looking at values and how you're building your values, I think there's a couple that just, some are contextual and some are pretty consistent. And I think that sense of togetherness, family, tribe, I think that's one that's probably always on or should be on everybody's list in some form. And the other one is integrity. And I think it, you know, you could probably get up to four values and that's probably a max for me. But I think those types of things I think are really important. And I think important to communicate to your teams.
Cool. And this next question is about being efficient with your time. You coaching, you know, multiple teams and having a lot of different jobs. What do you believe is most college coaches spend too much time doing, and where should they instead be focusing their efforts to be more efficient?
I think it varies because of phases in careers. I actually said this today. So when I was early in my Irvine days, I was just planning practices, recruiting, spending time with the guys. I was young and single and didn't have any kids at home. And so it was pretty easy to spend a lot of hours. And then we had some success. So then what started happening is I was on the hiring committee for the men's basketball coach. And then I was on the hiring committee for the AD. And then at Irvine, because they don't have a football program. And at the time, basketball wasn't that strong. So then if somebody at the Rotary Club or the Alumni Association or something needed a speaker, then all of a sudden you're speaking. And that becomes an important role for you because you become an advocate for the program. And you broaden your support base and an ability to generate value with your program. And I think that's really, really critical. And but that's different. And that pulls you away from maybe that time that you spent planning a practice or spending time with the guys. And then maybe you get married and have a couple kids and you need to be home at 5 o'clock. So there's just these, and even today, back to my story. So today, Stanford gets cut. Well, I'm in the middle of practice and my phone starts blowing up and I look down and see what happened. And I, you know, now that I'm the national team coach and working with First Point, I have something to say about that. People are looking to me. After I'm done with this, I got to call the Washington Post about this. Okay. So that's kind of odd to me. You know, Washington Post wants to talk to me about Stanford volleyball. But you know what? That's important. So then you start to have to really rely on your staff and how you're delegating, how you organize, how you ensure that your plan is being executed and really leading down to your staff to ensure that your philosophy and values are consistently communicated to your group and that the relationship building still exists. And you have to be creative with how you do that because your time gets stretched. And so I think to answer your question, it is a little bit different depending upon where you are in your career. The critical elements are communicating, organization of plans. I think relationships right at the top. How do you maintain those types of relationships with your players? I cannot stand. I remember my first year at Irvine. And I got so at the time I had two assistant coaches that were making $7,500 each. So I had zero help in the office. And I remember walking into my supervisor. She was the interim AD at the time. And I said, listen, I'm not doing paperwork anymore. And if that means that I just need to put all expenses on my credit card and I'll deal with it later, that's what I'm doing because I can't handle it anymore. And I was dead serious, you know, like I'm not doing paperwork anymore. I'm coaching volleyball. And, it was interesting that I got a really good response. All of a sudden I had some administrative help. And, so I think you just need to continue to focus on the most important things. I mean, you can get so bogged down on emails and texts and stuff and paperwork and NC2A compliance stuff. It's just a bummer because it does take you away from the relationships and the practice planning, the recruiting and the fundraising you should be doing. And I think you just got to figure out what the most important things are for you. And I think those four are a pretty good start, and make sure that you really, I call it calendarizing. Like I need to, for me right now, I need to calendarize everything. I have it blocked off and sometimes 45, 30 minute intervals and my entire day is packed. And I just need to make sure that it's got to be on my calendar or it doesn't happen. And I think that the amount of communication and how much we're getting hit with texts and emails these days, it's mind boggling. So I just think trying to manage that stuff so you can stay focused on the most important things, relationships and your team.
That's a great message for me. I'm nodding my head and realizing that. And I'm sure a lot of other coaches are too. We have one more from Caitlin. She says, with someone who values mental training so highly, she wants to know, what's the next frontier of sports performance that you're pursuing?
That's a great question. I think it's continuously learning from those who are at the forefront of science. And sometimes those lessons can circle you back to principles that haven't changed a whole lot. So last week, maybe it was 2 weeks ago now, I was fortunate enough to be on a Zoom call with one of the world's foremost experts on visual perception, pattern recognition, and just learning about how can we teach our athletes better? What do we need to remind them? And how do we best teach our athletes in practice plan design and during the different phases of their career, and just continuing to have dialogue with people who are significantly smarter than me. Mm-hmm. And I think that to me, that always energizes me. And in terms of next forefront of technology, I don't know. I'm kind of interested in VR. I'd be really curious about virtual reality and how, because at the end of the day, getting back to the principal perspective, it really is about how you utilize the balance between repetition and reflection. I think that's really interesting to me. Like, and how much time do you allow an athlete to reflect upon a stimuli? What do they learn from it versus how many balls you're given in a day? How do you utilize technology to help that reflective moment? And how quickly can you distribute that? I think that's really interesting to me. So VR is something I'm thinking a little bit about, but mostly it's just, again, I think it's always trying to get better at how I design, plan, and think about practices. I think as I'm talking through this, the other one that's really interesting to me is feedback. I think one of the things I'm considering right now is as we get older as coaches and better as coaches and more knowledgeable as coaches, do we also say more? If we know more, do we say more? And is that a good thing? And, what are the best learning environments? How do we create them? What are the best ways of giving feedback? Because I think that's, we talk about drill design, and I'm guilty of being a tinkerer of drills and trying to find the best drill ever. I hear a lot of coaches talking about how they have, one drill or one practice plan design, and that's not me. I do think we're, as Hugh McCutcheon would say, where the rubber meets the road is in how you utilize those drills to teach the game. And that has everything to do with the type of feedback you're giving or creating. And so that to me is a real interesting area. So probably I'd like to know a little bit more about VR, continue to talk to really smart people about their areas of expertise, and then feedback.
Good areas. How far away would you guess VR is?
I don't think it's that far away.
Really?
You can see football programs, which obviously have the budgets for it, starting to utilize those with their quarterbacks and such. And I'd like to know more about it. If we weren't in COVID right now and I was stuck at home, and Chip Kelly is a really, he's a great guy. I really have enjoyed getting to know Chip. He's approachable and, really thoughtful. I think he's got a real intellectual curiosity about him and a scientific kind of thought process. And he's always been like, yeah, come on by, let's chat about this, let's talk about that. And I'd like to go walk into his office if I could right now and just say, hey, walk me through this, and what company are you using, and how much is it costing you, and how could this be utilized for what we're doing, and how do we create those environments? Especially now in COVID. I mean, wouldn't it be great if we had that set up already and we could be somehow developing reps and practice plan designs through VR? I think that'd be awesome. I just know that the library is not there yet in our sport. So it's just about creating it.
Yeah, that'd be big time. All right, last question. It's from LMU Assistant Athletic Director Ashley Armstrong. She asks, it kind of wraps hopefully everything together. So what's most important for leaders, coaches, and administrators to provide to student athletes during this unprecedented time?
What's the most important thing? We've probably actually hit on it to some degree. I think it's probably the availability of resources. I think that, there's a lot that our student athletes are going through. They're living at home with mom and dad. They probably don't like that as much as they did a few years ago. And, they're dealing with an online environment, which I'm learning isn't as good as being in class and hard, time management and structure, which has been such a built in for the way that they've lived their lives over the last number of years, certainly in a sporting environment, is no longer there. So how could we help them provide structure and support and potentially psychological support and resources for them, I think, is really important. I think, as we mentioned before, ensuring that they have a proper mindset to handle the adversity and uncertainty that they're facing right now. I think as coaches, we are in an important position where we have a voice with the way that these athletes respond to these moments. And we have to lead by example. And we have to teach them different ways that they can think about this circumstance. And I think that's really, I think the one of the key elements to teaching the mental side of the game is to show them examples and teach them examples for thought processes and to discuss those thought processes in an open, vulnerable way. And I don't think this is any different. We have to provide an example. We have to be who we want them to be and be there for them if we need them. And again, maybe this is just the third thing, is continue to develop those relationships. I think relationships are really important, and it's not easy. And I've certainly been guilty of this as you get to the latter part of your career and you have different responsibilities. You're not around as much, and you have to make that time. You have to really put that on the calendar and let your athletes know that that's really valuable to them, and you have to do it. And so I think we've been better about that. I've been better about that. I just know how important, especially this generation, they want to have a good relationship with their coach. You know, when I was growing up, that wasn't even an expectation. And, back in those days, skates would show up 45 minutes after practice started and leave afterwards. And I mean, I'll be honest, none of us ever even gave it a second thought. That's just the way it was. And we didn't expect to have a great relationship with coach. And oftentimes, we ended up having a much better relationship with coach after we graduated. And that was just our generation. This generation is different. And they want to have a good relationship with their coach from day one. And that's important to me. It's important to them. And I think as we get separated and quarantined and we're not together every day, I think we need to continue to provide that relationship. So I think that'd probably be the third thing.
Yeah, well, that sounds like healthy progress, that addition to the way coaching and player relationship is. Well, we're so thankful for your time and thankful to have you as one of our leaders in our sport that we can lean on and learn from. And also thankful that you prioritized us over the Washington Post. So I hope that call goes well. Hopefully we warmed you up. But thanks so much for your time again.
Well, thanks, guys. I always appreciate these opportunities to talk and reflect a little bit. I think as we all charge through our lives, I think we probably don't have as much reflection time. And I think when I've gone through these conversations with you, it's good for me too. And I appreciate what you guys are doing and what you're doing for the sport and coaching education and the opportunity to use this technology to share some good conversations, and I've enjoyed listening to your guests, and I'm glad to be here.